Let's spend a couple minutes reviewing. We're on Sota Chaf Dalet Amid Beis. We're nearing the bottom. Although it's not much from the top to the bottom. But anyway, got about five lines from the bottom. But a machlokes, Rabbi Yoshaya and Rabbi Yonasan, regarding if certain women are able to drink the Sota waters or they're not able to drink and they don't get a ksuva. They all agree that a woman who was an arusa, who only had an erusin and not a kiddushin, if she is in seclusion with another man, she does not drink the sota waters, she does not get a ksuva, she's divorced, and that's it. We learned that from an exclusionary clause of Ishech under her husband's dominion. She's not under her husband's dominion. Then we had another case where there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yoshai and Rabbi Yonasan regarding a Yavama, a woman who's supposed to fall to Yivam to the brother, where Rabbi Yonasan says she too is excluded from drinking the waters and goes out without a ksuva because he has another exclusionary clause to exclude her from a different words of under the husband's domain. While on the other hand, Rabbi Yonasan says she is not excluded from that. Then the Gemara asked, wait a minute, it seems that you have to have this word Ishech. Without the word Ishech, we wouldn't exclude them at all, but there's a whole other concept that would exclude them all anyway. And what's that? It's from the words where the Torah says that, I'm going to get the exact words over here. It says, Mi baladei ishech, that you didn't sleep with a man besides your husband. Mean to say you have had to have slept with your husband before another man to make this at all a possibility that it was besides your husband who you slept with. And these two haven't slept with their husband, so they should be excluded automatically. So the Gemara answers, no, that's not so. It's possible that a woman who is betrothed could have slept with the betrothed. And then we need to come on to that pasuk. Mora says, well, that's a good answer in the case of a betrothed, but what about of a Yavama? What are you going to say there, Rabbi Yonasan? What are you going to say, that you excluded her only because it says your husband? What about the fact you couldn't have slept with her? He had not slept with her. You could say, well, say he slept with her too, but wait a minute, if he slept with her, then she married him, and now you can't exclude him at all. So he says, no, that's going to go like... Let's have a machlokes, Rav and Shmuel. One second. The Amar Rav, right? Rav said, well, Mor says, according to Rav, he acquires her, if the Yavam is with the Yavama, even without a formal Nisuim, he acquires her for everything. So he says, not a problem. Rav Yonasan will hold like Shmuel. Because Shmuel says he doesn't acquire for everything, only for certain things, but not as a real husband, so therefore we need that pasuk. Well, on the other hand, according to Rav, it wouldn't work. So now the Gemara says, now that we've come this far, maybe we have a very nice way of understanding the machlokes, Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshaya. Or rather, the reverse, the machlokes, Rav and Shmuel. If we've already gone this far and we're linking the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel with the machlokas of Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshaya, so Lema, let's say like this, Rav who says that if the Yavam sleeps with the Yavama, she's his wife for everything, let's say to Amar Rabbi Yoshaya, let's say he also Rabbi Yoshaya, because Rabbi Yoshaya says there is no case by the Yavam, the Yavama, by Yisota, that she's going to drink. And we can say, very good. And that, because Rav holds like Rabbi Yoshaya. Right? So that means he only said his law according to Rabbi Yoshaya, but not according to the other one. Here's the explanation. The Gemara has established that when the Torah excludes the Yavama from drinking the waters, it must refer to a case in which the Yavam cohabited with her promiscuously in her father-in-law's house. That's the only way we can get the case. Since in that case, Rav holds that she becomes the Yavam's wife in every respect, he must agree with Rabbi Yoshaya, who deems her eligible for the Sota test. Okay? Rav Shirley disagrees with Rav Yonasan, who exempts her from drinking the waters. Although Rav Yonasan derives his position from a verse, Rav could not interpret, he could not interpret the verse as referring to such a woman who's fully married. It won't work. Ushmuel, and we'll say Shmuel, Damar Rav Yonasan. And Rav Shmuel, who holds like Rav Yonasan, in which it is not going to be considered his wife totally. Shmuel holds that the efficient cohabitation renders him a married woman only regarding the matter specified in the passage. The Sota test is not one of those matters. Hence, Shmuel apparently follows Rav Yonasan, who excludes her from the test. So now you got it like that. So Rav holds like Rav Yishai and Shmuel, let's say. And that's what the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel depends on. Gemara says no. Amalek Rav. Rav says no. It could be Ana da Amri. I feel Rav Yonasan. I could really hold Rav Yonasan. And that this woman is excluded from drinking the water, even she's the Yavama. Why do you need a pasuk? She should be excluded anyway. Made itzakra. Why do we need a pasuk to exclude her? It would seem that otherwise, michlal the ishtamah, you see, it seems that otherwise she'd be considered a perfect wife. And how could she be considered a perfect wife? Answer, I'm sorry, let's go back. I jumped that. So the fact that we needed a pasuk, let me do that again. Why do we need a pasuk to exclude? Right? Even if I hold like Rabbi Yonasan, why do I need a pasuk to exclude? According to Rav, she's considered married in every way. And that's the answer. Michlal, the Ishama. So it follows that she is a full fledged wife, as I maintain. As Rabbi Yonasan derives from a verse, the Yom does not drink the bitter waters, even the Yom had already cohabited promiscuously with her. So that, therefore, that's the whole point, that she, even though, is still excluded. Thus, Rabbi Yonasan must agree with Rav's opinion that such cohabitation renders her fully married, for otherwise, what would you have to exclude her for? Saying that's the whole point. Since she totally is married, so that's why you need a pasuk to exclude her. Now, why it's excluding her, we'd have to see, but that's the whole point. The extra wording is excluding her. So now Gemara now holds that even if she is fully married, here's the point, we didn't know that, assume this till now, but even if she's fully married, it's possible the Torah would exclude her from the Sota procedure. This is because Yibum is different from other marriages insofar as it derives from the marriage to the deceased brother. By saying that Rav is consistent even with Rav Yonasan, the Gemara implies that his view is certainly compatible with Rav Yoshaya's ruling that she drinks the waters. So he can go either way. But Rav Yoshaya derived his ruling from a verse, a man. That's excluding some other things. According to Rav, who maintains that she's a full-fledged wife, why is the verse needed? The answer is that the verse is not necessarily the source of Rav Yoshaya's position. He might be seeing merely as an asmachta, but it's not exactly a definitive law. Okay, now let's go the other way. Going up to Chaf Hei Amad Al, Shmuel Amar, and Shmuel says, I don't have to necessarily be only like Rav Yonasan. Even though I say that they're not fully married, Ana da Amri, I feel Rabbi Yishaya. I can even hold like Rabbi Yishaya, who says that the Yavama is someone included in drinking the waters. He's not a full-fledged wife. Since we needed a pasuk to include her, Mechlal de lav ishta, that she's liable for suspicion and can get divorced. Michlal de la vishtahi klal. That means she's not his wife at all. So I could hold like his opinion as well. So anyway, the Kitzur de Gemara says that Rav and Shmuel can hold like either opinion. So you don't have to say that they're depending on that machlokas. And we remain with a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. We remain with a machlokas Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshaya in terms of if the Yavam and Yavama, is she excluded from drinking the waters or not? Okay, that's the end of this little sugya. It's a machlokas.
So what would they have done if the situation was reversed?
Well, you'd have to go in the later poskim. Each one would have poskim differently. In his yeshiva, they poskim differently. Rabbi Yonasan would poskim this way, Rabbi Yoshaya would poskim that way. One would say she drinks, and one would say she doesn't drink. Whenever you have a machlokas, Hill and Shammai, what did they do on Hanukkah?
No, they
live differently.
But that's in your house. Here you're bringing the Sota to the Beis HaMikdash. Now you've got to do one thing or the other. Either she's going to make her drink or not drink. It's a centralized procedure here. for everyone to see. So what are they going to do?
I hear.
Well, that's a good point.
Good question.
I guess it never happened.
That, you know what? I probably saw. That's why it's a machlokas.
Yeah.
It probably was very unusual that a yavama. Remember, it's only in a case where she is the yavama slept with her before and then suspected her afterwards. So it could be it didn't happen. There was no precedence.
It could be. But maybe you just lost the transmission, and that's why there's a machlokas. Obviously, maybe it did happen.
Maybe. Yeah, could be. Okay, now we're going to switch modes and bring a new issue over here. And we'll see how it will relate to our Mishnah. At first it doesn't seem to relate, but it does. Here's the Shaila. Ibar Lahu, I'm going to ask the following Shaila. Now here, there is certain halachas that if a woman goes against Jewish practice, and we'll see what that means exactly. There's certain Jewish practice of a woman being modest. If she goes against certain practice, the halacha is she can be divorced without a ksuva. The whole question is she does she give? Do we at least give her a warning first? Or once she does it, the husband say, out, goodbye. So that is the question over here. Boy, Laho, the Gemara asks the following Shiloh. If a woman has transgressed an overes aldas, she transgresses the code of Jewish practice, meaning to say she's behaving in a way that's not the way tzniastic women acts. Doesn't mean she's been sleeping with another man, but she's acting externally in a very not modest way. Here's the example. The Mishnah states, the wife who breaches this code, for example, she goes into a public area without the proper hair covering, or spins thread in the marketplace in an immodest manner, or she flirts with men. Okay, she's flirty, right? Is penalized with the loss of her ksuva. In other words, the husband can divorce her and say, you're not getting a ksuva. Now that's the halacha. That is the halacha. The only question is, do we give her a warning first? In other words, the husband says, oh, I see you, but you keep talking to these guys. I'm divorcing you. Finished. I said, well, okay, you want a divorce? You got to give me a ksuva. He says, no, I don't have to give you a ksuva. You transgressed the code of conduct. She says, well, you didn't give me any warnings. So the question is, do you first have to get a warning for that? And then after the husband says, no, you better stop flirting with these guys. So if she stops flirting, fine. If not, he says, oh, you're not listening to me. You didn't stop flirting. So now I'm divorcing and you lose your ksuva. So that's the point. Is it upon her doing it automatically she can lose her ksuva? Or does she have to do it, be warned, and then continue to do it to lose her ksuva? That's the Shiloh the Gemara asks.
Why spitting thread?
It could be the way her butt, when you're spinning, the way your leg, because you're I think.
This way you have one of those machines in your
yeah, it could be the way your body.
I mean,
it draws attention. It's not just, you know, writing in a ledger. It's not like just it being a bookkeeper. It's probably a very, your body has to move around a lot and it draws attention. It's an activity. You don't have to do it in the marketplace. Spin the thread in your house. In the marketplace, everybody's seeing, you know, it draws attention. People say, oh, what are you doing? What do you mean? It's like, but these are things, and that's what's said in an immodest fashion. There's modest ways and not modest ways. Anyway, so here's the, so if she does this, here's the Shiloh. Sricha hasra lafsidak savasa. Does she need a warning first? And then she has to violate the warning and then she loses her ksuva? Oh, ain't it sricha? Or do we say she does not need a warning? That's the Shiloh. So now, what are the two sides of the coin? Mi amrin, and do we say, kivin do veris al dasi? Do we say that since she's already transgressing this code of Jewish modesty, do we say, lo boy asra, she doesn't need a warning? Because this is the way it is, right? What if we have two witnesses, she's sleeping with another man? Do we have to warn her, don't do it again? Okay, she's not sleeping with another man, But still, she's violated the code of practice. So do we say, well, she violated, she's out. That's it. They taught every good girl in Beis Yaakov, listen, these are not the things you do. These are not the modest ways. And your husband can divorce you without a ksuva. So don't ever do it. Do we say, look at it that way? Old Dilmore maybe will say, Tiboy Esra, she needs a warning. Sometimes you forget. Sometimes you don't realize. You know, you have many areas, let's say, The fire marshals come to your building. They don't always give you a fine right away. Even though you know what the rules are, you have to have updated fire extinguishers and this and that. And the fire marshal comes by and says, listen, you've violated. I'm giving you a warning and you got 2 weeks to fix it up. Okay, or they could say, listen, you knew what the law is. So you know you're supposed to do this. So that's kind of, a lot of times we mean to be good, but we just, you know, we forget. So that's the question. Do it or not. And we give her a warning. She gets a warning, and let's see how this side goes. So now, the Ehud Rabbah, so if she does tshuva, okay, she says, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize I got carried away, and this and that. Then, Tahud Rabbah, the husband, we give her a chance to do tshuva. So do we give her a chance to do tshuva or not? So now, what's the footnote say here? It is possible that the rabbis penalized her with the loss of her ksuva only if, prior to a violation of Jewish practice, she had been warned against such a behavior. The rabbis might have required a warning that she has an opportunity to change her ways. If she heeds the warning, she retains her ksuva, though she has transgressed in the past. On the other hand, perhaps the rabbis decreed that she lose the ksuva on account of the behavior itself, even if it is not preceded by the warning. The warning, now, what about the warning? The warning would have to be given by the husband or his representative in the presence of witnesses, though. If we're already saying there has to be a warning, we have to prove that there was a warning. What if the guy says, okay, I'm divorcing my wife. I'm not giving you ksuva. The person says, why? Well, I warned her many times not to do these unsneezed things. She says, can you prove it? No, but every time she came home, I would yell and scream at her and warn her. Well, so if you don't prove it, then we don't know there's a warning. So if either we say, and even if she does act not see, she'd have to have witnesses here or not. Either way, there's got to be witnesses for something. Even if she gets knocked out right away, there have to be witnesses that saw she behaved immodestly.
One witness, probably.
No, probably two.
Would you only need one?
No, that's for something else. That's for a sota, once you already have some other warnings. But here, it's just, let's say she just starts spitting thread in public. And if you hold, she doesn't need a warning. There have to be two witnesses that said she spinned the thread in public. Or you say, no, first, if there has to be a warning. And to say, I warned her and she still violated, he'd have to have two witnesses that he warned her. Okay? Then you'd have to have...
One witness.
Well, then I think that's a machlokas, right? I guess that would be a machlokas too. How much? Be that as it may, the main thing is, does she have to have a warning that we know for sure is true? For sure we have to have witnesses that she transgressed. If you don't have witnesses she transgressed, how can you do anything? Not too hard, though, because if she's doing it in public, it's usually we'll find witnesses. The warning is the difficult part, but do you need the warning or not?
So the code of Jewish practice is probably varies from one community to another as to what...
Well, there's certain things that are for sure part of the code, and other things are not. You know, you can't say, well, in our community, we let women be dress very immorally, and that's our code. No, that doesn't work. Again, I wouldn't suggest we do this nowadays, because the whole world is not moral. So it's like, you know, the fact, you know, but again, you know, if let's put it this way. If a very frum man, let's say a yeshivish couple, okay, I'll make it very clear. They both went to Cheder and she went to Beis Yaakov and she was taught to cover her hair and dress and it's all. And he marries her and that's where they are. All of a sudden she starts to roll up her sleeves and go sleeveless and she decides to not wear a shetel. The husband, if warning or not, can clearly divorce her and not give her ksuva. That would be halacha l'maisa today. Again, although you have to worry about Canadian law, which could be a different issue. But what?
Get
divorced, but she could claim a lot of money, much more than a ksuva. Okay, it's somehow like this becomes mood issues. Imagine, you go to court and you say I'm divorced. Well, why? Because she's not acting religious. The court says, so okay, so we're going to split the property in half. Believe me, she got more than a ksuva out of that. The Bezdin won't make him give her a ksuva, but the courts will. So The guy may change his mind in divorcing his wife, unless there's no money. If there's no money at all, I have no idea, you know, how this would work in Eretz Yisrael if they allow them to go to religious courts only. But but otherwise, you know, you can't like this. Let's say they were secular, they became Baal Tshuvas. The husband came about Juve, then he can't take it, go to the best. I want to divorce her because she's not dressing modestly. They're going to say, listen, she was dressed modestly. You married her to begin with that way. It would probably not, you know, be as big of an issue. But there are certain standards. Right, you're right. But in terms of, there are certain standards you can't just say, well, that's not our standard. We know we let all women go sleeveless. That's not a standard. That's against halacha. What standards could be is, you know, our custom, let's say in Yerushalayim, in the real Haredi neighborhoods, even if a woman has a dress that's well over the knees, she still has to go with black pantyhose, black stockings. That's the way it is in certain areas of Yerushalayim. And that's the standard over there. And if you live there and you're married there, you got to follow that standard. Other people say, no, if her dress is beyond her knees, she doesn't need anything. Okay, but the certain things, forget it. You can't just say, well, that's not, we're not so particular. We let our wives go with bikinis in the middle of the street. No, well, that's just, that won't fit according to anything. Right, that's the issue. Now, so that's the shaila. Does she need a warning or not? So now, the answer will be, one of the potential answers is based on what our Mishnah says. Toshma, come in here. What did we say in our Mishnah? Arusa. A woman who only has an engagement, v'shomeres yomim, woman waiting to fall to yibum. What did we paskin in our Mishnah? Like Rabbi Yonasan, lo shosos, they don't drink the bitter waters, v'lo notlos ksuva, and she doesn't collect the ksuva. That's the halacha. So now, let's see what doesn't happen and what does happen. Remember, what we already made this implication on the beginning of the week. So what happens to her? He divorces her, she gets no ksuva. Yeah, but what was he able to do? He was able to give her a warning. Remember? It was a warning. He had to have warned her, don't be in seclusion with this man. She had to be in seclusion with the man. So he's married enough to her, they're connected enough, that the warning is a warning. Because if you could say, listen, he has no business over her. What business is he to warn her? He's not even married. We could say, forget it. If she went in seclusion with somebody, she doesn't have to drink anything. She's entitled to a ksuva because what's your warning? We're not, no. But we see, although they're not strongly married, they're connected enough that the warning is a legitimate warning. But after that, there's nothing much we can do because psukim have excluded her from drinking. And since she can't drink, she loses her ksuva. That's what we have. So that, the more it's just fleshing it out. So mishtahu de lo shasya. The mish is clearly telling us drinking, she can't drink. But the fact that she loses her ksuva, that clearly means ha kinuya machnala. But clearly, the arus, the fiance or the yavam, clearly can warn her, and the warning is a legal warning to put her in this predicament. That's clear from our Mishnah. So now the Gemara says. So now the question is, lamai. So now, for what purpose does he have to give the warning? Okay. The fact is, she's not going to drink the waters anyway. Right? Gemara's just going to state the obvious now. Well, no, it's not. It's just fleshing it out. No. But we're saying if she's not going to be able to drink the water anyway, she's already been excluded from that. So let's say that he can't, that no need, no warning isn't done. Because she's not going to drink the waters anyway. What's the whole purpose of warning her if we're never going to bring it to drinking? So Gemara states the obvious. So what is it there for? So why can't he warn her? What will it accomplish? At the end of the day, what? What will it accomplish?
He can divorce her and not give it.
She'll lose the ksuva. And that's what the warning is there for. The warning is there for. It's not, in these two cases, the warning is not, okay, now you're going to drink the water, now we're going to see what's going to happen, and then we'll decide. No, the fact that we allow the warmer means she loses her ksuva. That's the only thing the warning is worth. Follow? It's just stating the obvious. So what do we need it for? Lav, isn't it? Lahav sita ksuvasa. Isn't it meant to deprive her of her ksuva? So what do we see? Thus we see that a woman who hates her more will lose her ksuva only if she was warned. You have to have a warning. Because we could say like this, the fact that she can't drink the water, the fact is, let's say she loses her ksuva even without the warning. Why does it, why doesn't it just say that if she does this, she loses her ksuva? Right? By saying only she does not drink. The Mishnah says they don't drink and they don't get the ksuva, but the warning is considered a warning. Why doesn't it just say that a woman who acts this way, she loses her ksuva? The Mishnah could have said like this. A woman who is waiting for Yibum, a woman who's engaged, if she goes into in seclusion, she loses her ksuva, finished, without even having to be warned beforehand. Why did the Mishnah say that? The Mishnah is saying, if he warns her, then she's going to lose her ksuva. Right? You could have said, listen, she's waiting for Yibum. Listen, this guy's not her husband. She's not her husband. Who's he to warn her? Nothing to warn, but very simple. If she starts acting in a way that she goes into seclusion, just let her lose her ksuva straight out. But we don't say that. What do we say? No, it has to be warned. You only can warn her, and then she loses her ksuva. It's not a situation where you're warning her, and then she drinks the water, and then in that situation, she never loses the ksuva. Either she lives or she dies. Right? So what are we saying in these two cases? That, you know what, the relationship is such that if he warns her, effectively what happens? She loses her ksuva. Now, why does he have to even warn her? Even without a warning, let's say she loses the ksuva. So, no, you see from this, a woman never loses a ksuva unless she gets a warning. You follow? The Mishnah implies that she must be given a warning. This warning is certainly needed to render her forbidden to her husband. The Gemara currently assumes that it's also needed to deprive her of her ksuva. That's Gemara assumes. In other words, the warning means she can't be with her husband, and also she loses her ksuva. Now, a sota violates Jewish practice by secluding herself with men. That's one of the behaviors a woman doesn't do. Hence, given that a sota retains her ksuva unless she was warned, in other words, if a woman goes into seclusion with a man, in general, if a woman just goes into seclusion, we don't know what she's doing, that's not a Jewish practice. Women don't do that. But for her to lose the ksuva, we're saying you got to have a warning for that, right? That seems to be over here, right? So must be, you have to be warned. You understand the proof? We're saying since these women don't drink and they lose their ksuva, right? They don't drink and they don't get their ksuva. It means that, so why don't we just say, you know, that there's nothing going on at all. So no, it is. The warning was something. Warning was effectively making her lose her ksuva. You know, so it must be, you have to be warned in order to lose the ksuva. That's how it works. Because if he didn't warn her, it seems she wouldn't have, there would be no reason to lose the ksuva. That's what Gemara assumes. What?
If you didn't warn her, there's no procedure to follow. She's not a soldier.
Well, but if he divorces her,
he can divorce her. Question is, like in a case where there's no warning and he wants to divorce her,
he has to give her a ksuva. So we're trying to figure cases where she violates something where you don't get a ksuva.
So if he didn't warn her, but she did something else, she was with a guy.
We don't.
There's witnesses. There was no warning. He divorces her and there's no ksuva.
Well, we don't know that. From the Mishnah applies, he has to warn her.
Because she goes to sleep with another guy and two people see
her. Okay, that's different. But here she just went into seclusion. We don't know if she slept with the other guy. Remember, we don't know if she slept with the other guy. What's the halacha there?
What I'm trying to say is that there could be no warning and no ksuva.
Only if something which is a blatant violation that the Bible says is you're out of the picture. Right, because she now has been with another man. This is not the same. Being with another man is not the same as not following Jewish practice. That's much worse. You don't need warrant. You don't have to warn a woman you weren't supposed to sleep with this man. Right? Gets a death penalty. I mean, this is really bad news. Right? So that doesn't need a warning. But the fact that she didn't wear her clothes, sneeze stick, that's right. It's not the same thing. There's no biblical punishments for that. It's all rabbinic in nature. So the question is, you need a warning. So now, what do we see by a sota? In order to make her any kind of problem that she loses a ksuva, it's got to be a warning. Otherwise, the Mishnah could have said, why didn't the Mishnah say if a woman is waiting to fall to Yivam, there's no halachas of sota. Finished. There's no halachas of sota. Because they're really not so married. But they don't say that. She says she can't drink and she loses her ksuba. It means he was able to warn her. And the warning was important, and there has to be a warning. So therefore it seems that's from that.
Why is it excluded? It just means that if there's a warning, then you lose your ksuba. But it doesn't mean that you need a warning.
Well, that's what the Gemara is assuming. So let's see what the answer is going to be. So we thought the whole point of the warning is for her to lose the ksuba. That's what we thought. Gemara says, maybe that's not what it's about. Omar Abaye says, really, the whole point isn't, the missus' whole point isn't to say she loses the ksuva only with a warning. The warning helps, love, no, it's mainly, the warning is what? La'osra love, to prohibit her to him, period. And she could have lost the ksuva anyway. In other words, what's the Torah really saying? He can warn her. In this case, once he warns her, is there a way out of it? If a husband warns a wife, there's always a way out of it. Drink. Right? But when a man is warning a woman that he can't give her to drink, so what's his warning really doing? Saying it's put her in doubt. That's what the Mishnah is teaching. The Mishnah is teaching the warning says she's prohibited to him. But it doesn't mean that she necessarily loses her ksuva. Right? It could be that even without a warning, she'd lose her ksuva. That's the point. The warning means that she can no longer be with him. Now, yes, she will lose her ksuva, but she might have been able to lose the ksuva even without a warning. That's the point. Then, in other words, if he's engaged to the woman and he didn't warn her, and she goes into schools with another man, and that's all, now, the truth is, he's got a choice. He could decide to marry her or not. Right? Because he hasn't warned her. That's the point. Now, he could choose maybe say, you know, I don't want to marry you. I don't want to go through this. And you lose your ksuva because I don't need a warning. We don't know. Maybe you need a warning, maybe you don't, but we don't know. So what's the whole point of that? His warning is of some value? Of some value. Once he's warned her, then there's no way the two of them can be married. Finished. It's not because she loses her ksuva only because he warns her. The warning makes it they can never be married. Now, could be she could even lose her ksuva even if he didn't warn her. Let's say he was just engaged to her, and then he didn't warn her, and she went into seclusion. The guy says, you know, I thought you were a different type of woman, and I'm already, and the law could be, you don't need a warning for that. I'm divorcing you, and you're not getting a ksuva. Or maybe no. Maybe she would get a ksuva. We don't know. But if he warns her, the main point of warning is, and therefore we can never be together, period. That's the main point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not trying to prove you need to have the warning to make her lose the ksuva. The Mishnah is proving the warning means that they can never be married. But really, she could possibly lose the ksuva without a warning, and therefore this case is not a proof. Okay, we'll stop over here. We still have this Shaila, and we're going to continue next week trying to bring more proofs of this Shaila. Does she have to warning to lose her ksuva by regular modesty issues or not?